This Week in Retronauts, I mean, you know what I mean. Hello, Naughties, and welcome to another episode of Retronauts presented by your favourite Retronaut, Stuart Gipp. I know I might not be your favourite Retronaut, but one person said that to me this week, so I'm considering that sort of a knighthood of sorts. I'm taking that as my role, basically. If you didn't guess from the humorous reference that I did a few seconds ago, today's episode is about Popeye, the sailor man. He lives in a caravan. I don't know. I can't think of a non-obscene way to end this. But of course, I'm joined as ever by the erstwhile, I don't even know how to describe him anymore. Internet
does, no.
Funny man.
Yeah.
Dave Bulmer. Hello, Dave.
Oh, hello. Hello there.
There he is.
Yep.
It's here.
Hello. Look at me. Here I am.
I might seem a bit groggy because I had a small sleep earlier in preparation for the podcast, and I forgot that when you sleep, it makes you tired. It's weird, right?
Yeah, it's rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, ugh. I hate that. I just never want to sleep again, truly. Where's Freddy Krueger when you need it?
I know. Yeah. You're only going to get your clock stolen by a ghost.
Oh no!
That's a reference you'll understand later, listeners.
That's quite a deep cut reference,
yeah,
as well.
It's
isn't it?
Such a deep cut that I wouldn't have got it an hour ago.
because while we are going to cover a multitude of Popeye games in today's podcast, I have to admit there may be a slightly unfair bias towards one in particular.
Yep.
And it's the one that you in America land will be the least knowledgeable of. So that's either very cool if you want to learn more about Popeye on the microcomputer, or not cool if you just want to hear things you already know regurgitated back to you. But you know what? I'm not here to be your pal.
No. I'm not here for your benefit at all.
I'm here to amuse myself for 2 hours at a time by talking about things.
It'll be all right. I'm going to share something really deeply personal about me and about like my relationship with my dad when I was really little and stuff like that. You're going to like it. It'll be nice.
Oh, I got a bit emotional when you said that.
Yeah, good.
I got a bit emotional.
Good.
Yeah.
That's as emotional as you're going to get, probably, because my relationship with my dad was like fine and remains fine. But
God, there we go.
You know what I mean?
They sold it now.
Yeah, so I just want to burst that bubble early on, just in case anyone's there, like gripped by the idea of drama happening. It's not gonna.
Yeah. Just in case anyone was looking forward to that, just cut them off.
Make sure we nip that in the bud right now.
Yeah. Okay, so the best thing I would normally would happen on a good podcast is we would tell you what Popeye is. But the fact of the matter is, everybody already knows who Popeye is.
You know exactly who Popeye is. He goes ugg ugg ugg.
Yeah, he goes ugg ugg ugg.
And he has a bit of spins and he does a little bit of punch.
Yeah, he does a spinach, doesn't he?
He has a spinach and he has a punch.
Loves his spinach.
On the first day of the month, specifically.
Do you think? Nice. Yeah. Do you think that Popeye eating spinach was intended to motivate children to eat their greens?
I don't know, because you hear that, don't you? People say it was. I don't know that it was. I think it was just meant to be like, oh, what can he do to get, you know, he does something healthy. It was probably like, if they'd have happened to have another idea that day at the Fleischer Studios, it would be that he, I don't know, like, lifted some weights and then was powerful then or whatever. But it, as I understand it, it had the effect of increasing the sales of spinach.
Well, the thing about Popeye is, right, Popeye is a very strong fellow.
He is.
Physically strong. I don't know if he's mentally strong. He seems like he might be a bit
He's a philosopher, you know?
He's a philosopher.
He's a simple man, but he's got a good thought in his head, is what he is.
I like that. That's nice. But in order to... I'm sure this is a very well-worn observation. It's like going, oh, I bet Shaggy was on drugs, man.
Can't wait to see what this is going to be.
Popeye squeezing a can of spinach to the extent that it shoots the spinach out of the top.
Yeah.
Like, that itself is a feat.
Yeah, you have to be strong. Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah.
You already
have to be strong, yeah.
If that multiplies his strength, like, say, tenfold, I honestly think it's like he starts seeing the world as if it's made of tissue paper.
Yeah. Imagine what he could squeeze.
That's how powerful he becomes. Yeah. He can squeeze a human and all their guts and
blood
in their body would come shooting up the
top. We're tiptoeing around it, aren't we? But yeah, that is what he could do. He needs to be very careful with Olive is the thing.
All I'm saying is I'm thinking Tetsuo and Akira right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it is. Has anyone ever drawn that, do you think?
Oh, they must have done.
Yeah. I like the idea of Popeye just beating everyone up, to be honest. Just like, I think they did
Then you're in luck.
Yeah. Because I remember reading a Popeye versus Mars Attacks comic book.
Oh, yeah.
And where he beat up lots of, Martians. You know, that was nice. That was fun. Marses.
That's nice. Was that, was that around when the film came out, or was that, like, classic?
No, it was actually surprisingly recently.
I was going to say, they're being,
an IDW thing.
No, we still know, that they were cards. You're like, yeah, jog on. Mm. You only heard about it because of the film.
No, yeah, nobody knew that they were cards.
Come on.
Shut up. You knew it because of the Tim Burton film.
Yeah. I don't even know if they were cards, or if that was just, like, a seeded memory that was part of the marketing for the film. I don't know.
The only thing I know about Mars Attacks, the movie that I remember... Mm. There used to be near my house a book sale that would occur where it was like a factory remained a book sale and loads of books would turn up and they were £1 each.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was ridiculously good.
Yeah.
Like, I was eating good back then. That's how I got into reading, I think. But two of the books I bought, for some reason, I don't know why I had both, were the children's novelization of Mars Attacks and the adult novelization of Mars Attacks. And I remember reading both and noticing that in one of them, the character who charges the Martians at the landing shouts, "Die, you alien buttheads," whereas in the adult, he says, "Die, you alien shitheads."
Right.
And I was like, my first realization that I was being lied to by, the government.
Yeah.
Mm.
Famously, the authors, the ghostwriters of all novelizations are the government.
Well, it's a metaphor, isn't it?
Mm, yeah. The initials Alan Dean Foster actually stand for American... Dudes fighting, which is what the government do in America because they got an army.
Oh, man. This episode rules already.
Yeah, this is great. We're properly talking about Popeye.
Yeah. So Popeye, his actual origins, which, again, I'm not going to go too deeply into, is there was a comic strip called Thimble Theatre in the New York Journal, and that was back in, 1919 by E.C. Seeger. Now, E.C., what was that standing for? I'm going to find out. I should have written it down, but I forgot.
I don't know. Albert Clifford.
It stands Elsie Chrysler Seeger. Now, that's an old-school name.
Yeah.
Elsie Chrysler. There's also a picture of the guy, and he looks a little bit like Vince McMahon. That's a bit scary.
Oh, does he?
Popeye was introduced as a side character who was not exactly sort of nice. He was quite censored, sweary, and unpleasant and violent.
Yeah, they just wanted to. They needed to hire a boat one day, and so they hired it from a sailor, and that was him.
Whereas the main characters were actually Harold Hamgravy and Olive Oil. Now, Olive Oil, of course, predating Popeye is interesting. Is an interesting thing. I didn't know that till today. But,
oh, yeah. No, I've got the start of a collection of the books because they did these lovely reprints of all the Popeye comics. Sadly, not any, or at least not many Thimble Theatre ones leading up to it, but, and they're these big hardbacks and they say P-O-P-E-O-I-E on the spines. And I've got as far as Pop. And if anyone can find me the iBooks,
Was it that they went out of print or something?
Yeah, they went out of print.
Fantagraphics, right? I assume they were Fantagraphics. I think they were doing those back in 2006. They started doing it.
Too far away for me to check.
Well, I mean, like, I think Pop is okay. At least you don't have something like PPY. That would be awful.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Just thinking about that, it just brings a cold sweat across the back of the neck, doesn't it?
So it's Olive Oil. It's Castor Oil was one of the main characters.
That.
He was her brother. And then Hamgravy is her boyfriend. Because because Olive Oil predated Popeye. Do you see? Because she dated
another guy
before Popeye.
I like it. I get it. That's good. I honestly think that Olive Oil is one of the great comedy names.
Yes.
Like, that is really good, isn't it?
Yes,
come on.
Very good, yeah.
But Popeye's first actual appearance was 1929. He was just like a minor character. He was hired to crew a ship for a voyage to a casino.
Yeah, and because of that, he was there on the boat when they went on that multi-week adventure or whatever it was.
Yeah, but then he sort of was, after that adventure, he was, like, gone. But then all the readers were like, this won't do.
Yeah.
And they were contacting E.C. Seeger and they were just like, bring back the Popeye guy.
Yeah.
Bring, we only want Popeye. Get rid of all the other rubbish characters.
Yeah.
and have Popeye, just Popeye. We don't want ham gravy. What does that even mean? But then Popeye came back. He was given a bigger role, and the more newspapers picked the strip up. Like, it became much more popular. And ham gravy actually left the strip in mid-1930. Imagine that. Imagine being ousted from your own strip by Popeye. I mean, if anyone's going to do it, like, if Popeye got into podcasting, I'm doomed. Like, I'm gone, mate.
Oh, imagine. Oh, Popeye would be brilliant at podcasting.
It's Popeye's Popcast. Come on. It's the Popcast.
Oh, they probably do this, don't they?
Yeah, they probably do. I mean, nowadays, Popeye's like an internet meme. Like, he's on Twitter doing, like, funny tweets now. Like, I am disgustipated with my Instagram, or whatever kids like.
It's a bit funnier than that, actually, I think.
Gag.
Yeah, that's because
hashtag
Popeye likes to post a gag on.
Yeah.
I don't know, 9gag. What do people? Should we not do this? This isn't a very good bit.
This is dating us big time. So we don't know any memes.
No, we can't remember anything.
We're like, where are the little kids with their memes? We're so old. It's embarrassing how old we are.
Yeah, but it means that we experienced the old things, and we could talk about them on Retronauts.
It means we experienced peak Popeye.
Hmm. Well, I don't know about that. I think peak Popeye was like, I mean, it was the '20s, wasn't it? Peak Popeye.
The Roaring Twenties. Yeah, we weren't alive then. No. Thank God. Imagine it. Like, Jesus.
I know.
We'd be dead by now, probably.
Suddenly I feel all sprightly and young.
So Popeye became one of those always popular kind of things, like perennially popular with the Max Fleischer cartoons, which are excellent.
They really are. I've got the DVD collection of, like, the first one of all the black and white cartoons, and you kind of go in going, well, I guess I'll look at this for historic, but, and then you're like, this is great.
Mm-hmm. And they're just full of just ridiculously funny jokes about punching, essentially.
Yeah.
From there, of course, he went into sort of Hanna-Barbera, what's the word, ignominy, with the all-new Popeye Hour, which is what I sort of grew up watching. That was my kind of concept of Popeye, which is these hastily animated, kind of not very funny.
Yeah, they had a walk cycle sorted out. Yeah. They just put that down and had them walk along. And then they would have him, it was Hanna-Barbera, so his mouth would move and his head would go up and then down and then up and then
down.
And
he'd be in stories that were called, like, Gorilla My Dreams.
Stuff like that.
This is my running gag, which is that every Hanna-Barbera cartoon has to have an episode called Gorilla My Dreams.
I bet they all do.
Mm. This is actually shaken out surprisingly, like, accurately over the years as well.
Yeah.
Whenever I've had cause to check, which is surprisingly more than you'd think.
It is. Yeah, I wouldn't really ever put thought to how often you have to check that.
But the all-new Popeye Hour sort of also had made heavy use of the other characters, such as Sweepy and the Jeep. What's the name of the Jeep again?
The Jeep. Eugene.
He's got Eugene the Jeep, that's it. I don't know what his deal is.
This is a weird,
you know,
thing.
Olive Oil, Alice the Goon, who was originally a henchman of the Sea Hag, but then ended up being in the army with Olive for some reason.
Yeah, because they were doing, I bet it was like a MASH joke or something, wasn't it, in those days? Or was there a women sitcom about being in the army that it was actually
Laverne and Shirley in the army was a thing.
Yeah, to be honest, it probably was a joke on that. Like, they probably thought it was going to last longer than it did.
Well, I gotta say, those shorts were a laugh a second, I have to say.
So, listeners...
they weren't very good at being in the army.
They were they? Here in the UK, the all-new Popeye show... No, it wasn't called Hour, because they didn't play it for an hour. What would you... You wouldn't sit through an hour of that. But it was called the all-new Popeye show, and it was on, like, every day or something. It was just constantly on the kids' slot. Because we had, you know, we only had four channels, but on two of them, there was kids' programs every afternoon after school. And on the BBC, you had the new Popeye show. Just constant. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was on multiple days a week. I wouldn't swear it.
It was permanently on.
Yeah, it just felt like it was always. It was like that, Pink Panther repeats.
Yeah, but the all-new Popeye show was also sandwiched with Popeye and Son at random, it felt like.
Yeah.
They would throw on Popeye and Son sometime, in which Popeye had sex and had a child.
Yes, all on
presumably
screen.
With Olive, I don't know.
Mm, yeah.
Did they show him having sex with Olive?
Yes.
Bloody hell, that's surprising.
Yes. Oh, it was in the intro.
Yeah, that's... wow!
It was very...
I never saw the intro, because I was always at school, so I guess I missed the explicit...
It was very, very explicit. Like, he had his spinach, and he went, da-da-da-da-da-da, bang!
Oh, no. The sheer logistics of it just baffle me, honestly. So, yeah, Popeye mostly in my head at this point is a slightly cretinous cartoon that's always there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had, for some reason, a VHS tape of Popeye, of the all-new Popeye show, which was given to me, I don't know why, because I never expressed much interest in Popeye. But
you didn't have to, did you? It was just, it was on and you watched it, the end.
But I did wear it out watching it. Like, I watched it a lot. So I must have liked it
to some extent.
I don't recall laughing at it, but I think I just liked cartoons.
Yes,
so
absolutely. You know. No, you never laughed at that sort of thing. You just put it on, and the idea that you were supposed to laugh. Was it one of those sorts of cartoons that had a laugh track? I feel like it might.
No, it actually didn't. No, it was one of the few that didn't at the time as well. Like Scooby-Doo having a laugh track despite having next to no jokes, which is quite funny. The main joke in Scooby-Doo is a character's not seeing a ghost and then seeing a ghost. Like, that's pretty much the only joke that happens.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, what, shit, a ghost.
Wasn't a big fan of Scooby-Doo, you know. Mind you, but then we were in the scrappy era and they tell us that was bad, but I don't know, it was all right.
I like Scooby-Doo. I have a soft spot for the old doer, old Scoobster.
Yeah.
The Scoobmeister. When they did a Scoob movie a few years ago, CGI Scoob, it was called.
Yes.
It was rubbish, unfortunately, but they did introduce a really silly, like, this is the beginning of the Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe thing. Like, by dropping in hints about loads of Hanna-Barbera characters, having loads of Hanna-Barbera characters appear in it. And that's kind of my, like, oh man, that's exactly how you get my attention.
Oh, right.
By doing stuff like that, because I've got a huge, huge soft spot for Hanna-Barbera, which I don't... I mean, because there was so much of it on when I was a kid, it was just constantly there. Yeah, it was either Yogi's Treasure Hunt or, like, Quick Drama Gruer, Huckleberry Hound. Not a laugh to be had, any of them.
No.
But they were always there, and they were cartoons, so I watched them. And I was fascinated by how they all looked very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was my first awareness of a kind of house style, almost. Like, so it worked a lot for me. And Popeye does kind of come in for that, because that's what I associate Popeye with, rather than the Thimble Theatre or anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I would say a resurgence in Popeye interest came in 1980 when the Robert Altman Popeye movie came out, which I understand you're quite fond of.
I flipping love it, and I think it's genuinely a genius piece of wonderful art, but everyone hates it, don't they?
Well, I bought the DVD because of what you said about
it. Dear.
Like, I wanted to see it for myself. And I don't love it as much as you do, but I do appreciate it as a very singular piece of art, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's a movie that's ostensibly cartoonish, and yet it's shot in an unflinchingly realistic manner.
Yeah, that's it. It's so
Which
weird.
Is fascinating.
Yeah, and it's because of that weirdness that I love it. It's not. I'm under no illusions that it's a normal film. That's the point. That's why I like it. Normal films annoy me. That's why I love the Super Mario Brothers movie, and I'm not going to like the new Super Mario Brothers movie, because it's going to be normal.
Oh, who's... but the new Super Mario Brothers movie... Oh, Jesus, the new Super Mario Brothers movie, though. Oh, my God. Just the absolute state of everyone on Twitter going, like, this looks amazing.
Yeah, I get that you recognize it.
Does it really look amazing? Does it look amazing, or does it just look like a thing that you already know? Like, is that really that impressive to you, that you're going to go to the cinema and watch 2 hours of Mario saying, well, that just happened?
Yeah.
Really? It's sickening to me. Like, not only is it... I mean, Mario, I love Mario, and the point of Mario is that it's the guileless... thing. Like, Mario doesn't really have much of a personality. He's just a jumpy wahoo, you know?
He is, yeah.
And to make a Mario movie where the characters are anything, where they're all in that illumination kind of, like, arched eyebrow kind of mode.
I suppose
like, it makes me want to fling my body into a whirling thresher.
Me too.
And just be done with it, to be honest.
Me too. I mean, it is one way of depicting characters who don't have any personality, isn't it?
Well, it makes them have no personality in a different way.
Yeah, basically. in a worse way. Yeah.
Like, if you want to see a toad voiced by Keegan-Michael Key, then knock yourself out, honestly. Like, but, dear Lord.
And knock us out while you're at it, because we don't.
Yeah, knock me out, yeah. Having said that, I did like the Sonic movies, and they were pretty much just that as well, to be honest.
Yeah,
so
to be honest, yeah.
I have no defense whatsoever.
Yeah, they're okay.
Oh, they were fine, weren't they? Anyway, yeah. I'm going to make this about Popeye. Oh, yeah, they were developing a Popeye CGI animated movie with Genndy Tartakovsky, and the entire work print, like, animatic for that movie has leaked.
Yeah.
And it's out there, and you can watch it, and it's extremely entertaining.
I'd forgotten I haven't watched it.
Mm.
I'd forgotten that.
I mean,
that.
It is very much within that modern CGI animated kind of framework, but the sheer dynamic animation and drawing, which you can get a sense of even with the still drawings.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's very much worth watching. But it's the 1980 Popeye movie that prompted the actual point of this podcast, which I swear we're getting to.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the Popeye video game from Nintendo, the arcade game from 1982. I had a little go of this because I have never actually played this game. And it's a fairly typical for its time, climbing up and down like ladders and staircases. And basically, Olive Oil is at the top of the screen and she's throwing hearts down. And the hearts float down in a kind of amusing cartoonish way. Like they're made of paper almost.
Yeah, like petals, they flutter down.
Yeah, like petals, exactly. And you grab them. If they land on the ground, you have to get them quickly. They'll start flashing. And if you wait too long, they'll break. Mm. And then Olive, you'll lose a life. And Olive will like point at this broken heart. And it's kind of a cute idea, actually.
It's a good little cutscene. She tells you off for letting the heart break. Yeah. It's good.
And also, I learned in a nice bit of arcade game, like, efficiency. I learned how to play the game by watching the attract mode of the game once. It's so efficiently done that I was just like, oh, I see. I understand everything about this game now.
Yes.
Because the attract mode shows you everything without using any dialogue or any instructions. It just shows you how to play the game and you're like, oh, got it.
Yeah, and it's quite simple because basically there's several tiers on that. You never like move from screen to screen. Well, you do, no. Only when you finish the screen, go to the next one.
Yes.
And there's several tiers there. The hearts are fluttering down. And then there's stuff that gets in your way, including Bluto, basically.
Yeah, Bluto is a singular kind of hazard moving around the screen. Now, you can do a Pac-Man style escape to the left of the screen and wrap around to the right side, which you need to do a lot. While Bluto isn't exactly like all over the place, he can get you if you're above or below him.
Yeah, he can punch upwards or he can like swipe down.
Which really surprised me because I didn't think he could get you from above because I ran over him and he just jumped up and grabbed my leg and I was like, oh, God. But I love the animation when the animation is surprisingly good
and true to
the cartoons as
is
well.
Is it the arcade version that you played, the original one?
Yes, it is, yes.
It's really good, isn't it?
It's very fun. It's extremely enjoyable. I had a great time playing it. The single screen arcade game. I want to say it it followed Donkey Kong.
Well, yes, and of course the famous trivia is that Shigeru Miyamoto started off making a Popeye game, but they couldn't get the license back then, and that game became Tetris.
Oh, fascinating. That game became Doki Doki Panic.
Yeah.
That game became Project Hammer.
Yeah. That game became Skyrim.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good gag. I'm glad that we hopped on it. So that was good. But no, the arcade Popeye was also... there was also ported to like a Game & Watch, which was quite popular, I believe.
Oh, I've not seen that, but I did play the NES version around my friend's house, and that was a quite popular version.
I did not play the NES version, actually. I forgot. Was it basically the same thing, except with worse graphics?
Yes, it was a very good conversion of the game to the NES, basically.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's a solid game. I don't think enough people really talk about it as an arcade kind of classic. I'd put it up there with stuff like Donkey Kong. Like, the level, when it goes to level to level, it's not just the game gets harder. The layouts change significantly, as do the visuals.
It's completely different. Like, there's a level where what she's throwing at you changes. There's musical notes in the city level, and there's the letters of the word help in a boat level, I think.
Yeah, it's actual proper transition. It's not like old school, super old school arcade just gets faster, gets harder. Mm. Though when it presumably eventually it loops and then it does start actually doing
that. Well, let me tell you, when it loops, So in the first level, like, you know, the first go round, as well as Bluto, that sea hag shows up and she'll sometimes throw bottles at you and you can punch them out.
Yeah, you punch them out of the sky.
Yeah, they just smash when you punch them. That's pretty good. There are cans of spinach. That's the only way you can fight back Bluto, but he's usually guarding the level, the tier that the spinach is on. If you get that, yes, you can go and get him and you can punch him into the sea. It's dead good.
It's incredible. He goes, it's so funny, like, still, and yeah, it's so satisfying to just bop him off, like, so he goes flying.
Yeah.
That's something that some of these other games get very right, so we'll get to that as well.
When it loops round, the sea hag shows up and she starts yakking skulls at you. And there's skulls coming after her, and she's got a little pile of skulls next to her, and she's throwing them. Though there's another thing where Popeye, this is quite good, Popeye can punch a punching bag, and it hits a barrel, and that drops down, and you can get Bluto on the end with it. And now he's running around with a barrel on his head, going, "Where am I? Oh, what's going on here?" It's a good get. It's full of stuff.
Doesn't he says that? That's what he says in the opening to the All New Popeye Show, isn't it?
Popeye,
in that
exact show. Thing. When I think,
what's going on here?
Doesn't he put him in a box then, like a crate or something? Oh, what's going?
Probably.
He goes, whoa.
Yeah, I remember. God, this is like protein rush right now. He puts him up a flagpole, doesn't he?
Probably.
He hoists him up a flagpole going,
there's something to do with, like,
gotta get
the washing lines and things and then rockets.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, oh God, it's wretched. And olive oil goes, Popeye, help!
Doubtless.
Useless.
And it plays a sort of slowed down version of the music from Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, that's really strange.
It's really weird. Never mind anything.
I do like the attract mode that has the actual, like, Popeye blowing in his pipe and going,
yeah,
that's cool.
Yep. It's a good game. And elevated by, can you imagine it being 1980, whatever year you said this game came out?
I can imagine that, yeah.
Can you imagine that? And going in and, like, there's a Popeye one. And, like, you know, if you happen to be into Popeye for whatever reason, you're like, oh, Popeye one, I'll go and have a look at that. And it not only does everything Popeye-y, but it's good as well. It's a good game as well. You would have had a brilliant time.
Yeah, so not only do you get your dose of Popeye action, you also get an enjoyable video gaming experience, yeah.
As a video gaming experience, it's pretty much strung to the finish.
Nice. That's a funny reference to the lyrics of the Popeye song.
It is.
Yeah. but the next Popeye game, chronologically, is... I'm going to go ahead and call this the main event.
For today's episode, yeah.
For today's episode, because it was... now, this was published by... They're called DKtronics.
Mm.
But I think there's an apostrophe in there.
Fine.
So, that I don't know if they're supposed to be Dicktronics. Because that seems, like, a bit naughty, don't you think?
If they were called Dicktronics, then yes, that would be naughty.
Ducktronics, very naughty.
They could be Ducktronics.
Let's say Ducktronics, then. That's much nicer for the listeners. Don Priestley, a fairly well-regarded Spectrum programmer, he had previously done a game based on Minder, as well as some others. He made this Popeye game for the Sinclair ZX Spectrum 48K microcomputer. He was well known for producing extremely large sprites that didn't suffer from color clash using some kind of arcane Pascal basic powers. Yeah. God knows what they were. Now, I didn't actually have this game.
Well, you missed out.
But
then.
My understanding is that my erstwhile co-host, Mr. Dave Bulmer, did.
This game is one of the biggest video game love affairs of my whole wide life.
Oh my God.
This is one of my key memories of playing any game. I love this game, and I will try to explain why and why it was so good.
Mm.
So I remember the day I got it. I remember the day I saw it in the shop. It was a shop called Children's World, which was also where
I remember Children's World.
Do you? That was also the shop where I first played Sonic. Which, you know, and I'm from Sonic the Comic, the podcast, by the way, listeners. So that's kind of like my sort of job now. And so, like, this, there was a lot of stuff centered around this wonderful shop. It was an amazing shop, but no, never mind that. Just imagine an amazing shop. And imagine a shop so amazing that the way in is a helter-skelter. That's how good this shop is, right? And in this shop, I was in the games, computer games-y area. They wouldn't, I don't know if they would have had a Mega Drive yet, probably not. And they had just like an end, what do you call it when it's the end of an aisle, the display on the end? And
I know what you mean. Yeah.
And I think they may have had a turny roundy as well. And on either this turny roundy or some sort of thing, there were all these Spectrum tapes. And
you mean a rack, a revolving rack of games?
Yes,
that's
what I mean.
A turny roundy.
Yeah. And
okay, let's say with your
invented
name.
And patented by Tony Roundy in 1960.
Nice.
Make up a number. So Popeye was on there, and I recognised him from the all new Popeye show off of telly. So I'm looking.
You're like, oh, that's that guy from that rubbish cartoon I don't like.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I liked it.
Well, fair enough.
Because it was on, and it was drawings. I looked at the back of this tape. Now, what I should have done, if I was being professional, I would have come to this podcast with my copy of the tape, which is paces behind my back now. I could go and get it now, but I'm not going to. That's a waste of time.
No, screw that.
And then I would read to you what it said on the back. But the gist of what it said on the back was that in this game, you're going to be collecting hearts. And I can imagine that people who are into the arcade game might have thought, brilliant, I like that game, I'll buy this, and then become disappointed because it's literally nothing like it. And what's really odd is that collecting hearts is like the main thing you do in nearly every Popeye game anyone's ever made. And I don't know why. It's really
and
odd.
Also every game anyone's ever made.
That will be why. But it, I can't explain what happened to my brain in that moment or why, but there was this flash of inspiration that went off. And I wonder if that is the moment in which I gained a sort of sentience. Like, and I stopped being a little tiny boy and was aware of the world around me or something. Because what it did, it described Popeye, you've got to go and look for hearts. And they could be hidden anywhere in the world. And however it was that it described that, that was what kicked off my imagination. I was like, anywhere in the world? And suddenly, I'm aware of how much world there is around me that I don't usually concern myself with.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, what about over there? What about over there? And there's pictures, you know, screenshots on the back of hearts that can be seen through windows. And I think there was probably a screenshot of half a heart poking out from behind something, because that was a strong image that I had. And I am not kidding when I tell you that, A, when I got the game home, it lived up to this thing that I'd imagined of, like, wow, anywhere in the... If I just, like, went into someone's house, would there be a heart there? If I looked through a window and I went in, would there be a heart there? It lived up to that. And B, it's completely changed the way I view the world. I still see these hearts everywhere, or places where they would be. Today, I was out on a walk, and I was like, there's one up in that window. There'd be one there. And I'll tell you how you get to it as well. You go up that staircase,
oh my
God, see around there. You go around here, you go up there. This was what it unlocked in my brain. And just in that moment, when I saw it in the shop, I haven't played the game yet. I get it home, I play the game, and it's exactly as I was imagining. So, Popeye.
Before we continue, could I interrupt you? Because I have found the inlay for Popeye on the internet.
What did it say?
So I'd like to read it. Instructions. You need to demonstrate your love for olive oil by collecting 25 hearts and taking them back to her at home. While on your quest, Olive's love, shown by the love meter, slowly fades, so you must keep returning to renew her love with hearts.
Yep.
When she has all 25, you will be rewarded.
Yep.
Collect spinach for recovery for when you are knocked over. Collect keys to open doors. Each key fits a particular door. Collect other items. They're all essential. No more than 8 items can be carried. As well as walking, climbing, etc., you can also move forwards or backwards through layers to take you in front of or behind objects, through doorways, and to avoid hazards.
I'll tell you about that in a minute. Yeah.
Up can mean climb a rope, or climb up steps, or move back, depending on where you are. All moving objects except Olive are dangerous and will knock you down if you're on their layer. They can pass harmlessly in front or behind you, but Bluto has a nasty habit of changing layer. Some of them are dangerous and helpful. Score 1,000 for each heart delivered. If you get all 25 hearts delivered to Olive, score a time bonus. Cryptic clues, and these are in bold.
Oh.
Space travel. Green bang. Hold, but no nudge.
Okay.
That's it.
So, picture if you're not already, you know, looking at it on YouTube, which I'm sure people do when they listen to these, picture a very colourful, very bright screen. Not normal looking for the spectrum, really, where you imagine everything either drawn in one colour or eye-searingly, you know, primary coloured sort of laser sprites that look a bit weird with dark backgrounds. This is a fully colourful screen, more or less all over it. As already mentioned, Popeye is enormous. I'll tell you, by way of illustration, I'll tell you about the first screen. You start in an archway at the top of a flight of little stairs, and you're Popeye, and he's most of the screen tall, and he's standing there, and he's doing something Don Priestley's big sprites used to do. This was just Don must have figured out how to do this, and it must have made him laugh as much as it made my dad laugh when he first saw it, because Popeye is standing there. And he's just, his face is just going off. There are loads of frames of animation going on in Popeye's face all the time. And it's not like, don't imagine an idle animation where he's looking round and going like, whatever. No, just his eyes are squinting open and closed and his mouth is roving around his face. And he's just pulling all these faces. It's really funny. And
he's gurning, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And he is standing, as I say, on this sort of platform on which is a window, a locked door, and then you can walk down this flight of steps. If you stand there long enough, Bluto will walk along down on the ground, down at the bottom, and you have to avoid him. Also, that bird, that vulture that's in Popeye a lot, that will fly back and forth as well. And you can see a door, and above that door, with the implication that there's a staircase there, you can see a window with, I think, a key in it. So, okay, I've got all the information I need here. I can go and get that key and go... You walk down the steps, and he walks in such a jaunty, animated Popeye way. It's well good, the animation. And you are immediately punched and killed by Bluto straight away. That's what happens, because you haven't yet learned the 3D system. As alluded to a minute ago, there's no... It's not like Streets of Rage or something where you can tell that there are... You know, that you can move back and forth in the screen. You just have to know about it. And if you know that there are three layers of 3D... at all times, then as you're standing there as Popeye, if you press like down, as in towards you, the player, Popeye will just do a little walking on the spot animation, and he doesn't get any bigger because it's a spectrum. He can't do that. The sprites don't scale, but now you are in the foreground. And if you're in a screen where you can do all three layers, then you can just hold up and he'll like oot-de-doo-doo, oot-de-doo-doo, and now he's in the back layer. Now,
I want to interject with two things. First of all, the in the eye red, that may not have been the exact same one you saw, because there are more than one. So the one that actually sparked your little heart with the bencher.
Well, you were reading the instructions there, not the blurb on the back, which would be what I read.
Oh, I see. Well, that's my error then. Because there's one here that says it's very different. On the actual tape on the back, it says the hearts can be anywhere, up the lighthouse, on board the ship, under the ocean, locked in the roof, locked in the house,
like
on the roof. That
it?
Sounds like the one that changed your life forever. What I want to do, just to make it clear to the listeners who aren't familiar with this game, the system of going from one layer to another, think of Guardian Heroes on the Saturn, where you jump either into the foreground or into the background, only it's not animated as such. You will do a walk towards the direction you're going, but you won't actually leap into the background.
Yeah.
You just will be there. You have to use your imagination.
Yeah, but what it means you can do... Yeah, and you have to keep track of where you are by just knowing, by remembering. But what it means is that, like, so the if you go off to the left, which you tend to do for some reason, there's a lighthouse there. And straight away, you can do 3D stuff with it. So if you go into the background, Popeye can, like, you know, hide behind this lighthouse. And just a little bit. You can't go round behind it, but you can just tuck in. And that makes you safe from Bluto. Because on this lighthouse is your first encounter with hearts. There's a couple of hearts up there, and if you're in front of the lighthouse and you jump, you can get it, but you'll be hit by Bluto if he arrives. So you hide round the back, wait for him to go, then you come round and you get your heart, you get your first can of spinach as well, which are like extra life mushrooms, you know. There's a door, and I guess, do you get a key there? I can't remember, to unlock that door to teach you how to do that. But you can go up this lighthouse anyway, through a set of steps that's in it. I'm not going to tell you what you can do in the whole game. This is just the examples of what went on. And at the top of it, you're at the top of the lighthouse. There's the light, and there's a fly circling round it to show you, you know, about the 3D. And now you can follow that fly. You can go round to the back, behind the light, to the foreground, in front of the light, and chase this fly around to avoid getting hit by it. It's I never thought about it before, but it's a clever little tutorial. Anyway.
It is.
People, I've multiple times just today, getting ready for this, I've just been thrown on a video of this game just to remind myself of anything I might have forgotten. And whenever people are making commentaries about it, they tend to say they don't like it. Now, they tend to be American, but...
What a surprise. What a huge surprise that Americans wouldn't like a Spectrum game.
So it's my understanding that perhaps people don't really like this game, but I think that is... I really think this is one of those cases where, like, yes, the reason I love it so much is because of my nostalgia and I had it in my childhood, but it's not
It's a Crash Smash.
Well, of course, yeah.
It was a Crash Smash.
Play it if it wasn't.
It was Crash Magazine, by the way, very influential newsfield publication back in the day. If a game was a Crash Smash, it meant it was really good and everyone would buy it. And you really wanted that sticker on the front of your game case, didn't you? That it's this is a Crash Smash.
The Dizzy games were Crash Smashes.
Of course they were. I bet some of them weren't, but
yeah, presumably. Oh, and speaking of Dizzy, I've said, if you've listened to our Dizzy episode, I said in that was the game that, like, managed to make a cartoon be on the Spectrum, and I shouldn't have really, I shouldn't have said that without mentioning that this guy, Don Priestley, who made this game, he did that. He had a totally different way of doing it, but his games looked even more like real cartoons playing out on.
They did, though. I think the original Dizzy has the justification of having come out somewhat earlier. I may be wrong about that.
Or the same year, but like it just squeaked in. Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I will say, as someone who wasn't. I mean, I've seen screenshots of this game before. I never had this as a child. It is extremely remarkable how big the characters and expressive they are, even like compared to most other Spectrum games, because not only are they extremely big and expressive, but they're also not clashing with the other colors. Like they are just actual.
It doesn't have color clash. Don Priestley is the only person who figured out how to not have color clash. And I don't think he told anyone because like no one else did it.
He's not telling. Yeah. The color clash is a very common things cited in Spectrum games where if one sprite passes over another sprite, the colors will merge together and it looks kind of weird.
It's when you see what's actually going on is that a sprite is just a window into a big square of color on the Spectrum, and you start to see that square as it passes across the background at items.
I mean, I had my first little go on Popeye today, and I didn't go left. I went right, and I saw that there was a rope I could climb.
Yes.
So I climbed up the rope to get the key that and heart that was up there.
Mm-hmm.
I got them, and there were more things to the left, but I couldn't get to them. And I assumed there was a wall there, and I had to go down and open the door and then climb up within the house. But I didn't get much further than that because I didn't really know what I was doing. But I'm going to go back to it because I really liked what I played of it.
So, yes. And that leads me to finish a sentence I started earlier. There's two of them.
Sorry.
One was where I said, I recognize that I like this because of nostalgia. But also, it's because I did that thing where you put loads of time into it. And in doing so, I figured out how it works and what it is. And how it works and what it is, I think, is really, really clever. So it's a tight map. God help me, but I'm going to make the comparison. It's kind of a Metroidvania in a way.
You fucker.
In the way that you're not powering up Popeye, but the whole map is made out of it very, very, very tight. It's a small, small map, but once you've found your way from one screen to another, you start to unlock or figure out ways from one place to the next in a kind of Dark Souls-y, Metroid-y way.
Shortcuts.
Like, did you try, having gone up that rope and gone in those windows to find those items and found that, oh, what I thought was just a row of windows next to each other that I would pass along as I walked along this whole corridor, actually it turns out I have to go somewhere else to get to these other ones.
Well, from there, I accidentally climbed down into an undergroundy kind of area.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Yeah, if you climb down that rope, because you can climb further up the rope and end up on the roof. Or,
oh, wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, or you can climb down and end up, like, are you under the sea even?
I don't know where it was. It was just an unusual area.
It is unusual, isn't it? It's weird. Up on the roof, by the way, if you go up there, there's something, a heart, I think, and a coin, I think. And if you stand there long enough, and this is what the instruction thing said about items that can hurt and help you.
Yeah.
If you stand there long enough, a UFO will fly past and it'll take your head off. Because it's at head height with Popeye and it'll hit him. But if you go up the lighthouse, you can hop onto it as it passes by and you can get carried along over the rooftops of Sweet Haven and into a new place.
And that's awesome.
And if you go down that rope, you're in a new place. And if you go through certain doors, you'll end up in new places. And so there's a bit where you can have traveled what feels like really, really far and done all of this stuff. And then there's a door and you're like, okay, go through the door. Where does this lead to? And it leads to the door that you come through at the very start of the game.
Outstanding.
At Olive Oil's house.
Pure spectrum.
But up till now, if you've gone through that door in the opposite direction, you've not ended up there, you've dropped down behind Olive Oil's house and you can walk along behind Olive Oil's house and everything.
Outstanding.
And I think there is something you can do, and maybe it's walk through that door that changes Olive Oil's, like that arch next to Olive Oil's house, into the way back to that other place. Don't quote me on that, but it's that sort of game. Things lead to things lead to things. And there's weird stuff everywhere. There's one bit where there's just like a sleeping dragon and you can't get too close to it or it'll come to life and breathe fire on you. And the animation is so good. It's Don Priestley is an animator as much as he is anything else. And so everything always looks fantastic and it moves brilliantly. What was the other thing I was about to tell you? There was a sentence I started and stopped again. I can't remember what it is now. Never mind.
It's all right. We'll do a full art where we just do that sentence. And
I know. Yeah, this is the other thing. So you've already brought up that you will be rewarded if you give Olive, or if you deposit your hearts in Olive. Because that's how it works. Yeah, you collect these hearts everywhere. And they're in really interesting, fascinating, devious places and sticking out behind things and up on the roof. That's what I think that's the phrase I saw that really got me, because I remember imagining things on people's roofs. You know, you can't even see up there. Are there hearts?
Who
up
knows
there?
What they're keeping up there? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's hearts up there. You never know. Whenever I see, you know, do you ever have this? You walk along in an interestingly built, probably old town, and you'll be walking along the pavement, and somebody's window in their house will be like at pavement height, and it looks really weird. Mm. There's a heart in there every time. and so when you... I was watching a video today, one of the ones I was using to remind myself with, and the American, I believe, said, so you're collecting hearts in order to... And I quote, this is what he said, in order to rescue Olive Oil. And I went, This fella doesn't know what's going on, because no shame to him. It's a perfectly good video other than that. But
no, shame, please.
I'll tell you exactly what happens, because I know what you're thinking. And when you collect these hearts, right?
Mm.
When you walk down those stairs on the first screen, the window is thrown open and there is Olive Oil in all her glory, and she's there and she's mugging as well. She's doing all that gurning animation as well.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go back up the stairs, there's Olive Oil, I'll go up the stairs to her. She slams the window shut, she disappears. Can't get to her. The door's locked, you can't get in there. But if you go away and collect hearts, now as you return to her, she'll stay at the window. And you walk up to her, and you deposit your... I mean, there's no other way to say it.
Mm.
You deposit your hearts in Olive Oil. This is depicted... Presumably they're kissing. It's depicted by her arms flail around, and that's all you can see of her, because, like, Popeye's facing her, she's in the way. Her arms flail around, you get a noise that's like... which is probably meant to be like kissy noisy, and hearts fly around everywhere.
You need to not do that, because you're going to make me feel very aroused.
Very aroused, yeah, sorry about that. Well, I mean, don't watch or play this game, and it's very arousing. But then what happens is...
Oh, I know. Powerfully so, yeah.
And then she slams the window shut, of course, because you have to go and get more hearts. But here's the thing. When you win the game, when you deliver the last heart to Olive, she closes that window again. And she opens the door.
And hello.
She doesn't close the window, because when you go in the open door and you walk in along, you now see Popeye in that window. He closes the window. You know, you know what happens next? The roof boings up and down for a bit, and that's the ending sequence.
Oh, my God.
Now, I never saw that when I was 5 years old and just starting school. Oh, promised you a little story about my dad. So,
oh, yes. But first, I'm not finished talking about that ending. I'm sorry.
No, okay, sure.
So, the implication...
Yes.
...is... I mean, Popeye absolutely is getting laid in there.
That's like that. That
is
going
not
up.
Like is that is not up for debate.
No.
Like he's collected all the hearts. The door's been opened. He's been invited in.
Yeah.
Then he closes the window because he's gonna be up to some shagging. Now that.
And then the
now that's an ending. That's an ending.
Yeah.
That's a game ending.
It's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? I'm not even making fun.
Mm. And you never, did you beat that ever on the Spectrum?
No. Yes, but with save states on an emulator when I was in my 20s.
No, I'm going to posit something now.
Yeah.
That is going to be controversial.
Okay.
And this is the strong distinction between British and American video games, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
British gamers, especially as kids, did not expect to finish any of their games.
No, that wasn't really in question.
I had a hand-me-down Spectrum with hand-me-down games collection, which was, and I'm not complaining, I was very fortunate to have this because it was a lot of games. There's probably about 40, I would say.
Yeah.
I never finished a single one of them despite constantly playing those games. And I never have, and I never will. I never finished a Spectrum game even now, like using an emulator, I don't think, apart from Manic Miner, which I definitely did with saves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if I actually have ever beaten a Spectrum game, like legitimately. I truly can't think of any.
Fair and square as a child, I beat Bruce Lee, but it's very short. And
also, Bruce Lee is shockingly like good and contemporary, weirdly enough.
Fantastic
so, yeah.
game. And it has that. It has what this game has, where
when we do another specking episode, we'll talk about that. But yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, it has what this game has, which is that thing where now that place you've already been to leads back to this place you started out at, and it does that connected thing as well.
Oh, that's a very specky thing though. Ollie and Lisa 3 does that. Yogi Bear does that. There's a lot of that in the Spectrum.
Oh, the Yogi game.
You know, thinking about it,
let's do one about the Yogi game one day.
Yeah, let's do it. I think I might have actually beaten Count Dokula, No Sax, Please, We're Egyptian.
What? No, you can't have. That's one of history's hardest games.
No, I think I might have beaten it just by pure dicking about. Plus, I think I might have had a map from an issue of Crash or something.
Oh, possibly. Because you had to... Oh, I remember the map, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
But you had to, like... You had to do it in exactly the right order in just, like... You had like a minute and a half to do the whole game or something. It was ridiculous.
I think you had 10 minutes and it was incredibly tight.
Yeah.
But the main reason I used to boot up the Dokula game was because I liked hearing the Dokula music that it would play.
Of course.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. It was great. Yeah. If we can get the Dokula theme here, I'd appreciate it. Thanks very much. In the heart of Transylvania, in the Vampire Hall of Fame, there's not a vampire as any other. Dokula. He won't bite, beast, the man, cause he's a vegetarian. And we need to also get some Popeye music. We need to get the Popeye and some music in here as well.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember how it goes. Remind me how it goes again?
Well, I mean, so there's the intro, and then there's the outro, and those are two different songs. And the intro is...
No, forget the hell with the intro.
Yeah, exactly.
No, hell with that. Get the intro, can just get in the bin. I don't care about the intro. I care about the outro only because it was excellent. And I'm trying to remember how it goes.
Getting down, running downtown, riding around with the boys.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. That's classic. Same exact time. Love it. Oh, God. Oh, man. Yeah, that's a classic, the sort of surf rock kind of ending for Popeye and Son.
It's the only good thing about the whole cartoon. Rad feeling, all right. Yeah, that's the thing. That was why you watched the cartoons. It had a great end theme, and like whoever it was at the time, Andy Peters or whoever, would, you know, speculate as to what they were saying. What they were saying was, it's a rad feeling, all right, but Andy wasn't ready for the word rad, so he was going, are they saying red? What are they saying?
Mm. What is this American nonsense, he would say.
Yeah.
Oh, Andy...
Jumping in the woody, let's go surfing, says the intro. And I had to really, like, I had to check through Beach Boys lyrics to figure out what they were saying with the word woody. I didn't know what a woody was. It was a kind of car that surfers had.
Ah, I see. A woody car.
A woody car. Woody the car.
A woody mobile.
Yep.
A surf mobile. I mean, you have a video of you doing 80s cartoon themes, right?
Well, yes, but it's Patreon only, so
I've accidentally... Yeah. Okay. Unless someone signs up to your Patreon, which case they would be able to listen to it. Well, you know, it's not very much money, is it? It's a small amount of money. It's very good. That's why I brought it up. I didn't bring it up to plug your Patreon. I brought it up to plug the video.
Yeah, it is quite good. It was I made it for a friend's wedding. I don't know how to say this sentence. For the wedding of two friends that are now wedded friends, you know?
Was it requested in any way, or did you just decide to your new video at their wedding?
They requested that I do some singing of my silly songs, and I decided, well, I'm going to go one better than that. I'm going to make a 15-minute medley of all of the things I can remember off the telly.
That's incredible.
Mostly as an excuse to sing Popeye and Son.
That's so good.
At someone's wedding in front of sensible people who are just trying to enjoy their day, and people's mums and dads and stuff.
You know, I think people from Retronauts and the Retronauts community are starting to cotton on to the fact that you made all of their younger YouTube video things, like the Sonic 2. So you've reached the end, you finished Sonic 2. I don't mind singing because you're good at singing and I'm not, so it just embarrasses me. But I think they're starting to realise, because like, hang on, I have this MP3 from many, many years ago that's attributed to Dave Bulmer. Is that the same Dave Bulmer?
It is.
Very same.
Yes, that was when I was mucking about on forums and people were like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we did some a cappella recordings of video game music? And I went, I used to do this on cassette, so I'm going to be quite good at this. And I did it. And I wasn't. It was dreadful. Like, they're bad. They're bad, but the thing is, nothing on the internet was good back then, so I was ahead of the curve. It was fine.
The fact that you put the effort in got you all of the glory. No guts, no glory.
And anyway, see if there's anything else left to say about the Popeye game. Probably not really, but just, it really, that thing of like, okay, what door is this the key to? Because I don't think the keys were universal. I think you had to find what door they were. And finding your way up through one of those and along this corridor and down there to find the keys. So there's one bit that's really, really clever towards the end where Don just starts being really silly with the 3D thing, and he just presents you with a room full of about, like, it might be a 9 grid of tall, thin rooms. Maybe a 6 grid, but it might be a 9 grid.
Yeah.
And some of them have hearts and some of them have keys, but you've got to figure out how to get through them in 3D. It's no good just going left and right. It's like, oh, wait. Now I have to go 2 forwards to get round that wall to get in there, and then 1 back, and then 1 forwards, and through this. And all the time, the sea hag is flying past, and you have to avoid her by being on a different layer to her. And it sounds aggravating, but the thing is, it's funny. That's the thing, right? Don Priestley was like, he was like a Beano cartoonist, but for games.
I think he's still alive, so he like a Beano cartoonist, but for games.
Don, can we be friends, please? I want to talk to Don. I want to have a conversation with him about how good his
He may still be. I'm not sure if he's alive. I'll try and find out. I think he's kind of gone slightly reclusive. But there is the most recent interview I could find with him was from like 2005, so it's quite possible that he is now a corpse, but I hope not.
I hope not, and if so, someone drops some spinach in him and he'll kick his legs about and
jump. Oh dear, I'm not sure that works.
It does, it does. He taught me it does. And he's a teacher, as well as before he made games, he was a teacher. And he was a teacher after.
Well, he went with his son to a coding class, Pascal coding class, and his son dropped out, and he was like, screw that, I'm going to keep doing this. So he was like kind of old even at the time for a Spectrum programmer.
That rules. Oh, was he? Might be too old to be alive then.
He's probably fine. There's sadly no way of finding out.
I dispute that.
Yeah, just find his email address and go, dear Don Priestley, are you alive?
Yeah.
Love, David Bulmer.
Yeah. Well, don't put that. Put whatever your name is. Whoever it is listening to this does it. And then put, Dave Bulmer is definitely the biggest fan of your Popeye game that there is. To get in touch with him because he thinks you're cool. My dad, I don't know what it was. I don't know why this one, but this was the game my dad would play. My dad has never been, neither of my parents have ever played video games, except, you know, mum would play Tetris on the back of a Walkman that we had once, and she had a DS for things like Picross, but she's not. Neither of them played games. But dad would play Popeye. And I mean, I'm pretty sure he did it entirely for my benefit, but it became the thing we did together. Like, when he would be home from work, we would play Popeye for a few minutes because he could and I couldn't. He could, like, he could operate it. And it was a bit too fiddly for me because I'm like 5 years old. It was one of the first games we had. And it was just lovely, you know, that was just the thing we used to do. So after that, like, Dad only ever used computers for mucking about with, like, 3D software and, you know, just sort of doing things that were interesting tinkering after that. But it was lovely. I remember actually being at his work and going on about, oh, should we play Popeye tonight? Yes, all right. That was nice. And there's no, like, you know, again. If there's any dramatic tension here at all, you know, let me dispel it again, which is that we've never fallen out, me and my dad. Do you know what I mean? This isn't very important because it's the last time. No, he's fine, and we're still friends, and it's all fine. So really, I haven't got a story about my relationship with my dad and this game. But
oh, for God's sake,
play it together, and it's nice. It was really nice. I think you should play it with your dad's listeners. Find your dad and make him play this Popeye game with you.
If they're alive. Yes. If not, then sorry.
If not, I don't know. I'll play it with you.
I'll be your dad.
Yeah.
I don't think me and my dad used to play Spectrum as well, now that I think about it. They're mostly like World Soccer and like Soccer
Manager. Boo. So,
well, that was what he liked, you know. And
typical dads. Sport and beer and ties. That's the thing dads like, aren't it?
You're... an aversion to sports video games is both understandable, but I find slightly regrettable.
Yeah.
Because it has locked you out from a lot of genuinely good things. However, I choose to think, and I do not judge you on this, please understand that this is not a judgmental thing. You, by doing what you have done and completely disavowing any kind of sports-related entertainment, which is what I think you have done.
Of any kind, yep, correct.
Of any kind. You have saved yourself from sifting through some shit. So the nuggets are there, but you still have to get your hands very pooey to get
very,
to them.
Very pooey. Yeah.
So very pooey.
Well, that's the thing. The poo ratio is so high.
Thankfully, you've opted the Sonic fanbase, which in no way is like that. Yeah. It is a flawless diamond from top to bottom. I definitely don't hate it.
I managed to not be involved with that for the longest time, but STCTP did need doing, and now, yes, I'm stuck in it.
It had to be done. It simply had to be done.
Yeah. Getting down, running downtown, riding around with the boys. Pop, pop.
So, is there anything left to say about Spectrum Popeye? Probably the most anyone's ever talked about Spectrum Popeye ever since its inception.
There's a couple of small addendums to say, which is that there were two more games.
Yes, there were. Yes.
And there's not very much to say about either of them because I don't care about them.
They weren't Don Priestley and they weren't really interesting or good.
No, Popeye 2 was an absolutely... I don't even know if I ever had Popeye 2. I know I played it, but I don't know if that was just a demo or not. But I barely ever played it because it was a fairly standard platformer, Popeye 2. It was back to the standard Spectrum graphics where it's all just like a blue background with things drawn in black. Popeye on a construction site, like that one Popeye cartoon where the baby Sweet Pea crawls around on a construction site. And sure enough, he's up there, but he's only one of many things. You just head up the ladders and girders, doing stuff. There's bombs, you go and touch them to defuse them. There's burgers, you pick them up, give them a Wimpy. There's the baby.
Oh, God, I love Wimpy.
Yeah?
Jay Wellington Wimpy, what a character.
He's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah, and he inspired an entire fast food franchise as well.
All he wants is a burger, that's all. He just wants
to eat burgers.
And doesn't it, like, I was just thinking about this today. Like,
it's the most relatable character in the history of fiction.
Yeah, he's right, isn't he?
Yeah.
Isn't he? He is right. If you could base your life around just having burgers whenever possible, that really is lovely. That's a nice way to be.
But also sitting at a table holding a knife and fork with a plate in front of you with a napkin.
Yeah. Just
waiting for your burger.
Yeah, yeah. Just in case a burger goes by or someone gives you a burger. He's like a human cat, isn't he, Wimpy?
Well, he has a classic iconic catchphrase, which is, I would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yeah. He will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
He's a beautiful man.
He's the best.
He's like the Jughead of Popeye universe. You know, all he cares about is burgers, and I respect that. I think that J. Wellington Wimpy and Jughead would get on really well, actually.
Yeah. Would they? Would there be a clash? Because I don't know about Archie, right? I just don't know.
I don't know. Maybe there would be a clash because maybe each of them would think that the other was trying to eat their burgers.
Well, they wouldn't be wrong. And the reason I said I don't know Archie, Jughead, he's a burger man, is he? He's like a wimpy.
Yeah, he loves burgers. Yeah.
Well, there's a problem. Yeah.
And that's what leads to the Great Riverdale Jughead/Wimpy Burger Wars.
Yeah, the Great Riverdale, not really very many burgers left time.
Yeah, oh dear, yeah.
Yeah.
The chocolate shop goes out of business because there's just no more burgers.
This is what happened when Wimpy was younger, and then he sailed out to Sweet Haven, and that's where he is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that game, normal platform game, you go up. The top of the level, that's Bluto's up there. He's got, or maybe he's being Brutus this week, I can't remember. He's got Olive with him, and you punch him, and it's really funny. The way you fight in Popeye 2 is that I can't remember if you have to like Z and X like in track and field and stuff like that, or whether you just press one button or hold it down. I can't remember what the button is, but I just remember that it's like, have you ever done this joke as a child? I definitely have, where you and a friend stand in front of each other and go, let's fight. And the way you fight is just by like having your fists up and just moving them back and forth, like little steam train pistons. Biff, 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 biff. That is what Popeye does in this game. And he goes, biff, 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 biff.
Amazing.
Biff. First on one of the goons and then on Bluto. And he biffs him until he goes away. And all of this time, someone is chucking spinach cans. And as he gets him, he goes, diddly-dee-diddy, and now he biffs up. I mean, if Bluto had a health bar, it would be going down faster once you had a diddly-dee-diddy, presumably. But I don't know. You do see there's a Popeye's arm at the bottom of the screen all the time. And depending on whether it's big or little, means you can punch things, you know, or be hurt by things. So that's that game. Then there's another couple of levels of that, the different levels. And then there's Popeye 3.
Oh, God, yeah.
Now, I never played Popeye 3, And you've already correctly identified why. It is sports adjacent. Popeye 3 is a wrestling game.
It's called Wrestle Crazy.
Yeah.
Popeye 3 Wrestle Crazy. Where Popeye wrestles loads of space aliens, including the actual Xenomorph from Alien.
Yeah, I think he's the first one. Certainly in the video I watched today, he's the first one. I don't know if he always is. And the Lost in Space robot, he's in there as well.
Yeah.
You get a screen up at the start of each round that's like the commentator, like, and coming from the planet Gazitskis, here is he's the biggest, baddest. Like, there's a little bit of spiel for each character. And then you biff some and buff some, and always that rough some.
It's really, 1992 is late for a Spectrum release, right? That's a pretty late release for the Spectrum. The consoles are in full swing.
Yeah.
By this point, everyone's got a Mega Drive, and everyone's going, Spectrum, PU.
Yeah, put ding.
Your Sinclair, not happy.
No, no.
Mm.
They managed to hold on till 93, though.
They did, yeah.
As did
I. Good for them.
The thing is, a lot of the specky games that were coming out then were actually some of the best ones, because they knew how to do it by that time. They'd really figured out how to make that machine sing. And it felt comfortable now. Like, early Spectrum games are like, ooh, they're really weird, and that's part of the appeal. Oh, what's going on there? That's everything was eerie. Everything was spooky in the main Spectrum era.
Yeah.
By 1992, they all just looked like quite cool little cartoony games.
One of my favorite specky games, genuinely, is the Bangers and Mash game based on the Monkees.
Really?
Yeah, and that was 92, and it really just plays beautifully. It's just like a little, almost console-ish platformer. It's really good. Jumping around, throwing like fruit at people and stuff. It's a lot of fun. Still very playable.
Who needs Donkey Kong Country, eh?
Yeah, exactly. It was the Spectrum's answer to Donkey Kong Country a few years earlier than it was even announced.
Well, that's the note. Exactly. Donkey Kong Country, I think you'll find, was the SNES's answer to Bangers and Mash.
Bangers and Mash, yeah, yeah, yeah. Good old Chaz and Dave.
Bangers and Mash, Bangers and Mash. The chimps are ribs, there ain't no doubt. Bangers and Mash, Bangers and Mash. I ain't a kidding you, them two keep monkeying about, they do. But Bangers and Mash, Bangers and Mash, all they want to do is have some fun. They never mean to do no harm, but you can guarantee they'll upset the apple cart, though accidentally. National bangers, clangers come about quite frequently. Bangers and Mash.
I would like to, before we move on to non-specky things, I want to talk about Don Priestley a tiny bit, and specifically my experience with Don Priestley, the programmer, because I never had Popeye when I was a kid, but you know what I did have? I had Trapdoor. And Trapdoor, based on the claymation-y series starring, I want to say, Willie Rushton?
Yes, I want to say Willie Rushton, shall we?
With
Willie Rushton.
The best theme song ever, Trapdoor.
Can't wait to hear that folded into the episode.
I hope so. I really hope so. Now, Trapdoor, since I didn't have Popeye, so obviously I wasn't cognizant of this at the time, but it seems a little bit like an evolution of Popeye, because while it still uses the whole sort of 3D in and out of the screen sort of action, it's now on what is very clearly delineated to be a 3D space. You move up and down the screen to move into the screen or further away as you expect. But everything's very, very clear. Like, you're moving in front of and behind things. Like, when you've got the trapdoor open, you can walk behind the trapdoor. You can walk in front of the trapdoor. You can walk to the side of the trapdoor to close it. The general premise of Trapdoor, if you're not familiar with it, because you probably aren't, is this character, Burke, is this blue creature who lives in thrall to this thing called the Thing Upstairs. And he is generally... The Thing Upstairs will usually just shout at him to get him some food. You never see the Thing Upstairs. And Burke will you often open this titular trap door and something nasty will come out of it, and he'll be warned off by his friend, who's a skull named Boney, and the Boney will just be like, "You don't think you should open the trap door, Burke?" And Burke will just be like, "Piss off, Boney," or something, and they'll open it. And a big bat will come out, and then they'll get into crazy antics with this bat. The other character is this little spider called Drut. Doesn't really matter. But the game...
imagine it's just completely brilliant.
Yes, it's very good. The game is a very interesting and free-form thing, where at the beginning, you essentially be allowed to amble around the trapdoor world, which is a castle and its grounds. And there are only a few screens. I'd say probably about 10, maybe 12. But they make maximum use out of it, because every screen has several interesting things in it, which will become useful in ways that require actual thought. For example, the Thing Upstairs will demand that you get him a can of worms is the first thing you have to get. And that one's quite easy, because all you need to do is find a can, find some worms, pick up the worms, drop them into the can, and once you have enough of them, send it up the lift.
Bosh.
Yeah, send it up the lift to the Thing Upstairs, who will then say, "Yum, yum, that was nice." Then he'll ask you something else, like a bug crush soda or something.
And these are coming down in big speech balloons, aren't they?
Yes, they do. Yeah, they appear on the screen. But there's a little bit of time between each one. You have a bit of time to amble around. So if you know what you're doing, you can start pre-prepping the next task, because you have a time limit on each task, obviously. It's not, like, super tight, but it's tight enough. So, like, as an example of puzzle, when you need to make crushed something, what you need to do, and the game does not spoon-feed you this, you have to figure this out, which as a kid I was able to do because it is kid-friendly puzzling.
Oh.
You place the item next to the trapdoor, walk over to the trapdoor lever and open it, and then when it opens, the lid of the trapdoor crushes it when it comes down. And then you, of course, close it again before something horrible comes out of the trapdoor. Yes. But then you've created your new item. You've created this thing. Then you also get items that require... I think it's crushed eyeballs, actually. You need to...
I think so. And you have to get them out of a bird or something, don't you?
No, it's like a plant that grows them.
Oh, that's right. But the you bird have to is figure... because of, there's an egg thing you have to do with the bird.
Yeah. The egg one is later, but it's very... It's both finicky, but in the way that makes it fun. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a juggling game. You have to juggle all these elements. Like, with the worms and the can of worms, you get, if you're clever, you can get loads of worms out of the trapdoor. But if you open the trapdoor, you're at risk of a big bat coming out of the trapdoor or something horrible coming out of the trapdoor and making your life much harder.
It's very clear. Don Priestley, right?
Yeah.
Given how the Popeye game, clearly nobody from Popeye was supervising him or making him do a particular thing, because he didn't in those days. Don Priestley watched Trapdoor. Like, this is not made by a guy who's just doing his job. Like, he knows Trapdoor in and out, and he has made the Trapdoor game, and he's got it right.
It's great. I mean, I'm not going to go on that too much, because we have quite a few more Popeye games to cover, and I'd like to keep this episode as expedient, unlike my usual efforts. I love the long episodes, but I thought it might be nice for the listeners if we got them something a bit breezy.
It might.
There was also Through the Trapdoor, also made by Don Priestley. Now, this isn't as good, because they've gone for the kind of traditional platformer.
Mm.
thing. But it's still got the giant sprites and the very inventive gameplay, because you were in this game, hence the title, you are in the trapdoor. I forget why you go in the trapdoor. There must be a good reason. But you end up trapped in there with Drutt, who's the little spider I mentioned earlier. And in this game, you can actually switch at any time between Burke and Drutt to solve puzzles. Now, Burke is obviously massive and slow-moving, but he also has hands. So he's able to do things. But Drutt is just this little leggy thing. You can jump really high, so he can dislodge things from high places and get to areas that Burke can't get to. And it's just a really difficult game. But having gone and looked at videos of it, like, as an adult, I see now that where I thought it was insanely difficult, it was actually just requiring a bit of patience or skills that I didn't quite have at the time. So while very difficult, it's actually not as horrible as I thought it was. I don't think it lives up to the creativity of the first game, really. But it definitely deserves at least a try, because there is some interesting synergy between the two playable characters there, which is a proto-Lost Vikings, I would call it, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's very cool. I mean, I'm not too familiar with the rest of the games that Dom Priestley went on to make. He didn't make that many more. He made a game about the British monarchy called, and I forget the name of it.
Flunky,
that's it. Where you walked around, I think.
Flunky is Don at his most spitting image and at his most, like, satirical cartoonist. You are a butler or something who is being given tasks to do in Buckingham Palace, and it's the actual royal family caricatured, and you have to get stuff or do a thing for each of them or whatever. And
so basically the trapdoor, except royal trapdoor.
Yeah, yeah. And like, if at all, except, well, the main difference is that whatever you do, there are royal guards trying to shoot you with big guns and kill you.
Interesting.
So you have to avoid them. I think, again, there's a little bit of, like, what level of 3D are you on? You can dodge the bullet that way, things like that. But I could be wrong, because I never played this one. But it is, well, writer Dan Whitehead, whose Specky Nation books I could have done this podcast without, but chose not to, and instead, you know, had a little read of the relevant bits before we began. Very good books. I love his Specky Nation books. He sort of describes it as, you know, the tasks are so thankless that it's, you wonder if it's part of the satire that here is a man representing a nation that will do anything for this family and gets nothing from them in return.
That is interesting, actually, and quite likely, in fact.
Mm. That's the vibe you get from Don Priestley games. This is a cartoonist with things to say and little cheeky jokes to make.
Mm. And sort of to wrap this fella up, this excellent Don Priestley, I want to say Malcolm Loses His Clock is the final game that he did.
Is it Malcolm? It feels like it's not Malcolm.
Gregory, excuse me, not Malcolm. Who's Malcolm? What am I on about?
I don't know.
There's no one called Malcolm.
No, nobody. There's nobody called Malcolm. It's weird that we think of it as a name.
It is weird. Gregory Loses His Clock is kind of apex of the style, by which I mean it is the most cartoonish game that he made. Like, the facial expressions are just, like, outstanding.
Yeah.
The graphics are outstanding. It looks astonishing.
Yeah. Like, it's amazing.
Not only have you got the complete lack of colour clash and the full colour everything, but the game actually moves quite a lot faster and smoother.
Ah, that's something I ought to have mentioned about Popeye. If you try and play it now, or even just watch a video, you're going to go, oh no, this is too slow, because the giant sprites kind of necessitated everything running very, very slowly. Luckily, we have emulators now, so speed your Specky up and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, with Gregory, it looks like it's all running at a completely normal speed. This is a game in which the premise here is Gregory is just a bloke or a little boy, difficult to tell which. He's in his pajamas and he goes to sleep. And the most fascinating intro sequence happens where a ghost steals his clock, but you don't see the ghost. Instead, Don, master of graphics, makes it so that all of the elements that make up the background ripple as this ghost passes by them. And it gets to...
That's outstanding.
It's like he corrupts the... You know, what he presumably does is he just tells all of the sprites to display the wrong edges, like the left side versus the right side. I don't know what it is, but this ghost ripples the background, gets your clock, takes it away, and then the whole room starts to just deconstruct around you and disappear element by element until it's just his head that's left. Gregory's head is all that's left. This then spins round and round and round, drops down, lands on his body, and now you're in a dream world, and you're amazing. Solving puzzles to find the pieces of the clock so that you can wake up and not be late for work slash school slash whatever it is. It's
so British.
Yeah. It's so British. It looks dead good. I only heard about it today. I've never heard of this game before.
It's staggering looking, like, for Spectrum game. It might be the best looking Spectrum game I've seen, honestly.
Yeah, probably.
It's absolutely astonishing. And it is a very interesting... It is a cross between Propi and Through the Trapdoor, because I think it retains the 2D plane.
Yeah.
This one. But everything just runs so beautifully, and the sense of exploration from Popeye is back.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's well worth checking out. Though it's not going to seem impressive unless you're familiar with the Spectrums. So.
Well, that's the thing. They are, though. Come on. They're Retronauts. They know this stuff.
They love the Spectrum.
You get it.
Big fans.
You get old stuff being fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And the thing is, this guy... So I expected, when I was looking this up, because I've always had high regard for this guy, and I've known that he did other games I didn't play. I didn't play the Benny Hill game.
No, he was not. There's an interview with him where he gets asked about that, and he becomes quite gruff. He says, "No, I don't want to talk about that."
Oh, what, the Benny Hill game?
Yeah.
Oh.
He says something. It was a crash interview where he said, "Yeah, he doesn't. He wants his games not to be like that." Basically, that was not. Oh. He doesn't consider that to be a good game.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, it was one of his first ones of that sort. I think it was one of his first big sprite games, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing when I looked him up today was that he did loads of games that didn't use his signature style at all. Games that you would never recognize as his, that are like just like, you know, menus and lists and things. That's fascinating to me, because he just, you know, from seeing his big sprite games, you'd never imagine he would have any interest in doing games that aren't like that, because it's such an auteur style. You can tell what is his.
Yes,
I'm watching now, as I speak to you, I'm watching now a video of Through the Trapdoor, and I saw a bit where, and I'm not that familiar with the Trapdoor game either, I just happened not to have it, but a bit where he fell down through a whole screen, and he landed with what has to be like a 5 to 10 frame elaborate animation of the guy falling flat on his face and pushing himself back up again.
He has multiple falling poses as well. Yeah. The further he falls, the more he gets kind of arched downwards, and his hands flail, and...
This guy is really brilliant.
Yeah, it's really brilliant.
Creepy, crawly, slimy things that stick on your skin. Horrid beasts with tentacles that want to pull you in. Squirmy worms, slugs, and snails that lie there in a goo. They'll wait down there forever till they get their hands on you. Would you open that trapdoor? You're a fool if you dare. Stay away from that trapdoor. Cause there's something.
So we're talking about Popeye, not Don Priestley, though obviously there is a reason to talk about Don Priestley, which is he's excellent. Popeye is also excellent, so I'm going to also talk about the other Popeye games that exist.
Let's do that.
So we're not going to go into the detail that we did on the Spectrum Popeye, because that was, considered the main event.
By the way, since this is like the Spectrum Popeye podcast I'm making, I've thought of another thing to say about it, but I'm going to say it at the end, as a little extra bonus. So remind me of that.
An Easter egg. I'm excited about this. Well, the other Popeye games at this time, during these specky years, were Popeye 1 and 2 for the Game Boy. Now, Popeye 1 for the Game Boy, they're by Sigma Enterprises, is a 1990 remarkably prehistoric-seeming maze game. The thing about this game is, what you do is you're walking around a maze, a la Pac-Man, though it's not really like that. You have to find olive oil and sort of collect olive oil, air quotes.
Yeah.
Then you have to find Sweepy, and that's the exit. But the whole time you've got, obviously, Bluto running around releasing his critters, like crocodiles and things, into the maze. Yeah. You can get spinach, which makes you super fast. But when I got the spinach, I then decided to go and try and beat up Bluto. He runs away from you and you have it, but when you walk into him, you just die.
Oh.
So they missed one of the most fundamental things about Popeye there, I think. Unless I missed something.
And about the classic maze game. Pick up the item.
Exactly. Yeah.
Get the baddie.
Now,
Although this is, having seen it myself, this doesn't really resemble Pac-Man. Anything, it looks like a Horus game. It looks
so
old.
That's actually true, yeah. It does feel like a specky game, you're right. But the thing that gets me about it is, ultimately, and I know this is going to sound silly because I know that's what it is, but you really are just walking around in a maze. Mm. Like, there's really not much more to it than that, because Bluto is not hard to avoid, like, at all. There is, like, nothing that's stopping you from getting away from him. There are always multiple routes to get away from him. Sometimes Wimpy comes along and drops a hamburger which blocks your path, but that is almost never going to be a problem.
That wouldn't be a concern to me. If there was a hamburger blocking my path, I know exactly what I would do about that.
Yeah, I know I'd resolve that problem as well.
Yeah.
But we'll leave that one for the listeners to figure out.
They are clever, aren't they?
They're very clever. I mean, you have to be a higher standard to listen to Retronauts, don't you? Okay, Popeye 2, made by Sigma Enterprises. Now, this was a pleasant surprise, because I tried this today, and when I'd seen videos of it before, it looks terrible. Like, it's a really ugly game for Game Boy, but in the sense that, not that it's super simple, because I like that, but in the sense that it doesn't have much in the way of environmental, like, anything.
That's it. Popeye himself looks perfectly good, but the background, the way I described it is, like, imagine if Mario Land 2 didn't have the graphical update that Mario Land 2 had, and it was just like a bigger, more zoomed-in Mario Land 1 sort of look.
Yeah, but even Mario Land 1 has some sense of something. Yeah. Like, and I love Mario Land, but when I actually played Popeye 2, regardless of its visuals, which I think are bad, and the music, which, and I'm not joking, it made me feel sick.
Oh.
I don't know how they managed it. There was some kind of discordant note in there that was triggering my sickness gland.
Yeah.
Or something. It was awful. Like, if I ever played this game again, I'd have to turn the music off. The actual level design is fine. Like, the gameplay is fine. There are plenty of, like, actual hidden bits and bobs and secrets and rewards for actually playing it well. It's quite enjoyable, honestly, for me, as a simple little platformer in the same vein as something like the Sunsoft Batman game. It's not as good as that, but it has that same vibe where it's just all very minimal.
Hmm.
And that's what works for the Game Boy, I think, minimalism. So, I kind of liked it. Wasn't amazing. It wasn't good-looking or good-sounding, but what matters, the gameplay was there.
Yeah.
Walking along using a Popeye strength to bust holes in walls and things. It was cool.
And what's worth mentioning is that Popeye's got a great big arm on him.
Yeah, massive arm.
Huge arm that's like as tall as he is. And I think it gets even bigger depending on how much stuff you've got.
The size of it, mate. You should see the size of his arm.
Yeah.
Vast. Stinking.
Yeah, like way bigger than Popeye. You know, even like we know Popeye's got a big arm, and that's the thing about Popeye. But this is ridiculous.
I mean, he would topple, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Like the size of that arm, mate.
Yeah, he'd be straight.
It's absurd.
It looks silly in the game, but that's you like that because it's part
of
the fun.
It works. Yeah. It was fine. I thought it was pretty good. And as well as that, I mean, this was a game that came out in 1991 in Japan but didn't get published in the West till like 94 for Europe, I think. I don't know why they bothered with that.
This was what
point.
I was going to ask, because the videos I saw about this said it was a Japan exclusive, but of course they were American, so I wonder if it came out here or what.
The internet says it came out in the US,
right,
but not till like 93. However, who knows? Because game history is completely decided by Wikipedia, essentially, which can be made up by anyone.
Just make it up.
But then there wasn't another Popeye game that I'm aware of until the Game Gear's Popeye Beach Volleyball, which is exactly as good as it sounds, to be honest.
Look, this one looks quite sweet.
Well, it's probably an okay if you want to play a game of beach volleyball, but who on the planet wants to do that?
Well, exactly. It's a sports game.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'm going to just lay out on the line here, okay? This is a quite masculine thing to say, and I apologize. The only game of beach volleyball that anyone would play, I think, would be one of those Dead or Alive sex volleyball games.
Oh, dear.
So they could lower their shades and turn to their friend and say, now that's what I call bump mapping.
Yeah.
And then when they looked at them blankly, you could then continue and say, I'm referring to the breasts.
Yeah, but they get it wrong. They get a bit confused, and they just turn around and lower their sunglasses and go, boobs. Sorry, no, I had a whole line.
They're like Duckman. They just start going, breasts.
Yeah.
Mm. So, thankfully, the Popeye beach volleyball game does not contain breasts. I know, it's a shame, because that's what I was here for. I was booting up on my Game Gear, I had it resting on my left leg, and I was rubbing my hands together going, here we go. Here we go.
That's the only... Breasts is the only thing that I ever fire up a Popeye thing for, and there's never been any yet, but I'm waiting still, and one day I'm hoping it'll happen.
Yeah, one day you'll get that sexy Popeye game that you crave.
Yeah, I know it... When it happens, I know it's going to be epic.
Mm-hmm. So Popeye Beach Volleyball, give that one a bit of a miss, I would say. It seems like a fairly okay-ish thing. It makes me wonder, I mean, of all the characters, I mean, the best thing about Popeye Beach Volleyball is the pub trivia that even exists, really, isn't it? Like, which popular character starred in a beach volleyball game?
Yeah.
It was Popeye. But then you could also say Klonoa, couldn't you? Klonoa Beach Volleyball, which is also a thing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. What? Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking.
Why is anyone interested in making any beach volleyball games?
Bubs.
Bubs. Is there a Bubsy one?
Bubsy Beach Volleyball, God almighty.
It should be.
Don't give them any ideas.
There should be a beach volleyball game. Now that there's this many, they're obliged to make them for all the rest of the characters there are, and all the rest of the franchises there are. I think the little sprites look quite nice in this, though.
They do look cute. It's not bad looking for a Game Gear game.
No, it's actually, for a Game Gear game, it's very good looking.
And since I'll be covering this eventually in my Game Gear Directory project, so looking forward to that. Another excuse to play this banger.
Brilliant, can't wait.
But interestingly enough, released on exactly the same day, August the 12th, 1994, what they called Popeye Day, I guess, was Poppy Ijiwaru Majo Sihag no Maki. I don't know if I pronounced any of that right, and I apologize if so.
You pronounced Sihag right.
Did I pronounce Popeye correct? Popeye. I'd like to hear how they say Popeye.
Yes.
Japanese. I bet that's interesting. But yes, this is a Super Nintendo game where you... Now, here's the thing that interests me about this game. I knew this has actually got a fan translation. Which is what I tried it with.
Because this is Japanese only, isn't it?
Yeah. So I downloaded this fan translation. Rest assured, listeners, yes, I'm going to say it again. I deleted it within 24 hours.
Of course.
As is the legal obligation. Now, interestingly enough, it's a single-player board game where you roll a dice and move around on a map, and wherever you land on the map, either some event's going to happen or you're going to be thrown into a 2D side-scrolling platform game level.
Oh.
And I'm going to be completely frank with you. I played this for quite a long time, but I couldn't figure out what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to actually finish the level, the map, and move on. So I just played a bit of the game. Now, what I played of the game, I actually rather liked. I thought it was rather good. The performance isn't superb. The frame rate's not great. But the level design is much less perfunctory than you expect it to be. There is actually effort here.
Hmm.
There are actually proper platforming game levels, not just afterthoughts. And some of them are long and some of them are short. And therein lies the board game aspect, sort of luck of it, I suppose. But you can also run into Bluto, who then you get have to dodge him a bit. You can run into this boxer character who you've got to then beat up. You can get items you can use on the board to make the hazards go away from you.
Oh, the boxer character. I bet he's the one that's in the comics and in the film.
Yes, that's right.
Ox Blood Ox Heart. I bet it's him.
Almost certainly him.
Cool.
And amazingly enough, this is very funny. Whenever you go into an area... you know the old school transition where you get like an iris out?
An
iris in, yeah. Well, they have that, but it's with the phrase, blow me down.
Oh, there you go.
The phrase, blow me down, irises you out.
Nice.
And then irises you back in again. It's incredible, to be honest. And the thing that fascinates me about this game, and this is some deep jip lore in a way here, there is a SNES game called The Flintstones, The Treasure of Sierra Madrock.
What's that about? Who's in that?
It's a board. It's a side-scrolling board game where you roll a dice, and then wherever you land on the map, you end up in a platform game level.
Oh, is it one of these ones?
No, it's not.
Huh.
But it raises the question of how did this happen twice? Like, was there a crossover? Did they see the Treasure of the Sierra Madrock, the 6 out of 10 Spencer's game, and did they go... We fancy a bit of that.
Yeah.
That's what we want. It's very odd, isn't it, that this happened twice. Like, what an unusual concept to happen twice on the same system. How unusual is that? I don't know if it's got the same director or anything. I mean, this seems like the sort of thing that I should look up. I mean, in fact, I'm going to.
Good idea.
Live on Retronauts. This is the sort of thing that you'd expect I would have done earlier.
Mm.
But no, not on this show. Developed by Technos, incidentally. Technos, of all people. And you have a two-player split-screen mode for the board game as well, which does make it a little bit more palatable, I would say.
Huh.
Doesn't appear to be any crossover here.
What? No.
So this thing happened twice. Oh, my God. Oh, no. Oh, my God. No. Oh, my God. What? I'm not even joking. I'm freaking out.
Okay, what?
Oh, Jesus, this is big. Okay,
they're both
hold
cartoons.
On to your, hold on to your genital trench.
Okay.
Popeye Ijiwaru Mahou Majo Sihag no Maki came out on August 12th, 1994 in Japan. Okay, The Flintstones, The Treasure of Sierra Madre Rock came out August 12th, 1994 in Japan. What's going on?
So, what?
What's going on? What's happening here?
I can't explain that.
I'm sorry for the dead air listeners, but I'm actually freaking out about this. This can't be real. I don't believe that this can be real. This is amazing. This is the most mind-boggling thing that has ever happened to
me. The more you say it, the more normal it happening starts to feel like.
No, it's not normal. It's not normal. It can't be a coincidence.
It can't be a coincidence.
This is staggering. The fact that there's not enough production information about this game to discover why this has happened.
I wonder if there's no crossover of production staff or the company that made it or anything, then could it be that this is exactly one development cycle since a really popular game like this came out in Japan?
I don't know, but this is actually genuinely exciting to me. Like, this is the kind of thing that makes me go, I must research this.
Hmm.
There's got to be some connection.
Imagine if you'd done this before the show.
I know, it's crazy.
There'd have been a huge.
But I just didn't. It was so unlikely.
Yeah.
That I just didn't bother doing the research. This is astonishing. Okay, listeners, I'm putting this out there for the noughties right now. If you happen to know what the hell's going on here, get in touch and we'll do an update on a future episode of the mystery
and
behind this.
We also extend that same question out to any of our episodes. If you know what the hell's going on,
what the hell's
going
on? Yeah, because we clearly got no clue. I don't know if we can really follow that, but I have to, because there is one final Popeye game to talk about. Well, technically two, actually.
Yeah.
In 2005, many years after Popeye had fallen into something of... he wasn't really popular anymore, I would say.
Mm.
He was un-Popeye.
Mm-hmm.
No disrespect to the character, who is great, but there wasn't a Popeye cartoon running.
Yeah, there wasn't a thing happening to do with Popeye.
Yeah. A game came out called Popeye Rush for Spinach.
Is this the Game Boy Advance one?
It is.
That looks quite good.
Yes, it does. However, it's not.
Ah.
Yeah, it's not very good.
Oh,
It's beautiful looking.
Yeah.
The sprites... this is a Namco game developed by Magic Pockets, published by Namco, I should say. Now, it looks glorious. Like, the sprites are these beautiful, pastel-y...
That's how I remember
gorgeous, it. Gorgeously animated characters. Now, there's four characters. Popeye, Olive Oil, Bluto and J. Wellington Wimpy. I refuse to not say his full name because I love it so much. Now, what it is, there's not really much like this game. It is quite unique, where it's a foot race in 2D with a 2D platformer. Now, what is that like? What is the game that is like? There is another one like this, but it's Dash and Desperados. That's it. One of my favorite games of all time.
Oh.
A Mega Drive game called Dash and Desperados, where it's...
Oh, yeah.
In that one, it's two players racing against each other to get the heart of a woman.
A woman.
But in this, it's a rush for spinach, clearly. I spent quite a long time trying to figure out whether rush for spinach is a pun of some sort.
I don't think so.
But it's not. They just really want that spinach. But it looks beautiful. In theory, it's very fun. In practice, unfortunately, it's quite annoying. Because there's not really much in the way of viable catch-up mechanics. So if you do fall behind, you're basically screwed, and you're spending about two or three minutes running pointlessly, waiting to lose. It's not horrible. There's plenty of different modes in the game and such, and it has got link-up multiplayer, but
Oh, who well, are you ever going to meet? Who, lots of modes. Then.
Yeah, but I mean, like, different types of races you can do. So there is variety there, and you can compete against like a character ghost. You can compete in like a challenge mode. You can do quick light races. You can do times against the clock races. There's plenty there. It's
also
and
what
it is quite gorgeous.
What it has going for it is yes, if you've got a Game Boy Advance,
yeah,
I can imagine myself enjoying this. On a game, but not on an emulator, not on a PC screen, no. On a Game Boy Advance, in a car. Oh, I'm just having a little run along. Yeah, I can imagine having fun, but
I mean, it has moments where it comes together and it is quite fun, like where you can, because you can get like vehicles and stuff when you're running around, you can like suddenly jump on a skateboard or something. And you can grind rails as Popeye's become kind of cool. He's just grinding Popeye, yeah. But my favorite one is you can get a pogo stick and. The pogo stick not only propels you really quickly forward, but it also is funny.
Yeah.
So it actually feels quite Popeye-ish, unlike getting on a skateboard, which is not very Popeye-ish.
No.
It's
a bit Popeye and Sun-ish.
That's true. If you're close by one of the opponents, you can press the B button to grab them and throw them behind you, which is quite funny.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, but the game just doesn't come together.
Is there link cable multiplayer?
Yes.
I see. That might be good.
Good luck finding another person who owns this game.
You will. Oh, yeah, that's true. You had to both have the cartridge in those days, didn't you?
There wasn't exactly a rush for Popeye Rush for Spinach, I would say. Though, of course, nowadays, in the world of emulators, that's not going to be a problem as long as you remember to delete the ROMs.
24 hours.
Yeah. I love how the reception for this game on Wikipedia is literally just Popeye Rush for Spinach received negative reviews.
Oh, wow.
Whoever wrote that, probably whoever's game came out on the same day, knowing that they couldn't compete with Popeye Rush for Spinach. 2005 for America, that one, 2006 for the EU. We had to wait even longer for the Rush for Spinach, so there was sort of a delay for Spinach,
no,
I guess.
No rush for Spinach.
No rush for Spinach there. Yeah, very good. Now, I'd like to say that was the final Popeye game, because that would spare us the pain of the actual most recent Popeye game.
Yeah.
Which is Popeye on the Switch, which is... Well, it was a meme for about 5 minutes, this game, because it is so legendarily crap. It's like they made it as... it's like they had the license and they were like, oh, crap, this license is expiring.
Yeah, well, like, did we find out what it is? Because there's obviously a reason. It's obviously something other than people wanting to make a game. It almost feels like money laundering, doesn't it?
It actually does. It actually does seem like money laundering. That's something I had not considered. But yes, it's absolutely terrible. It's, and weirdly enough, it says it's a modernized adaptation of the arcade game, but it's not.
No, what they mean by that is that, like, technically, whatever's going on at a particular time is from the arcade game. So Olive Oil throws hearts. You collect them. There's no jump. Bluto's there, and you can't hurt him unless you have Spinach, etc.
But it's all done on like what seems like default assets that came with the engine.
It is. They found what it is. It's an asset pack that you can.
Oh god!
It costs about £20 on whatever the engine is shop front. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. The levels are.
That is actually what it is.
Yeah, the levels are already made and not by these people. Like it's just that's just an environment you can buy. And the Popeye model, that's also that's an asset you can buy from somewhere. And that is what it is. They literally just went on the little online shop, found the bits, and technically made a game out of them.
That's horrible. That's really embarrassing.
So what you're doing is you're running around. It is a 3D game. You're running around this little town or whatever it is, and they're the hearts that are drifting down, and they're slow again. But because it's in 3D, what it thinks it is that you're going around finding the hearts in the 3D environment. Like, oh, here's one, oh, here's one, gathering them up. But because they also have to drift down, because that made sense in the arcade game, because you can collect them on the way down, Olive Oil is, like, up in a tower and she throws them, and you just have to wait for, like, ages for them to come down really slowly from the distance.
Jesus.
And Bluto's there.
It's just kind of sad, isn't it?
Like, yeah. And then there's a boat level, because there was a boat level on the arcade version, and she's saying again. So in the arcade game, it wasn't hearts on the boat level; it was the letters from the word help that fell down out of her speech balloon. Well, in this game, they've gone, okay, we'll do that, but you have to gather the letters to make a phrase.
Mm.
And the phrases are really weird stuff. It's like, it's not this, but it's like, you know, I've fallen and I can't get up. It's the equivalent of that. It's just like phrases you may have heard, but not in Popeye. Like, just phrases you may have heard.
That's horrible. I'd rather have a bowl of Cocoa Pops.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah.
I just said Cocoa Pups.
Aw, little Cocoa Puppies.
Oh, there they are. Hello, Cocoa Pups. Little Dachshunds. Oh, my God, I love them so much. Something I'd like to say about Popeye, before we get to your final Popeye anecdote.
Oh, yeah.
I sometimes think, thinking about Treasure of the Sierra Madroc, the SNES Flintstones game, it makes me think about the idea of a Mega Drive Popeye game, and wouldn't that have been brilliant?
I mean, yeah, of course it would.
A big, chunky, like, think of this, think about this, the Flintstones, have you played the Flintstones game on the Mega Drive? It's really great.
No, I haven't, actually.
Well, a game exactly like that, but with Popeye, would just be the most lovely thing in the world.
Yeah, it would.
A lovely, big, cartoony, chunky game where you punch the shit out of Bluto. And it makes me so sad, because Popeye deserves better.
It does.
Unlike many of these perennial characters from the past, he's actually funny, I think.
Yeah.
And it's still funny and can be amusing because violence is hilarious and everyone knows that.
If you're allowed to do Popeye properly, there are two things about Popeye that are
properly.
There are two things about Popeye that are really funny. One, he basically doesn't have a facial expression. Because of the way his face is always drawn, he gets to just always have the same facial expression. And that is really funny because it means that when he's really angry about something or confused about something, he has the same face, and he's just stood there with that face. And then, thing two, he will punch. That's how he solves problems. He punches things. And it's really, really funny. And I've controversially, this is why I, sorry everybody, didn't like the preview clip of the Genndy Tartakovsky Popeye. Do you remember they brought out a lavishly CGI-ed
where Popeye's getting, he's not punching anyone.
Well, he was just a normal cartoon character on a boat, and everyone was like, oh, this is brilliant. And it was, like, as a piece of animation, it was brilliant. But as a Popeye thing? No, thanks, it's nothing.
Wasn't it just basically Eugene the Jeep tricking people into punching each other instead of Popeye? Olive Oil was, like, crawling around like a tiny little noodle.
Yeah, I think so. And Popeye was going like, hey, I'm Popeye. I don't quite talk like this. And he was just very... It was very, very bendy and fluid. It looked fantastic. And I will watch a load of cartoons done like that. But Popeye? It wasn't.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
I wasn't into it. Sorry.
It's all right. Not to apologise to me, say. So apologise to the world.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, really. And I'll apologise to Genndy. You know, he put a lot of work into it.
I mean, I just think Popeye is something that is sadly quite unlikely to be done properly.
That's the thing.
Popeye-ly again.
Exactly. It runs completely counter to everything that is currently thought of as acceptable in cartoons.
It's a shame.
In a strange way, because it's very down-to-earth, but also the only joke is violence. And that's really good.
Well, it's like the old Tom and Jerry's, where, like, I went back to some of the old Tom and Jerry, and this is a very well-worn observation, but I watched some of the old Fred Quimby Tom and Jerry's, aka the best ones, and I don't think Fred Quimby actually worked on them, but so I feel bad associating it with him. But the one with the canary, the bird, do you remember that one? The little bird in the cage.
Oh,
there's a bit where. The bird is going home. Jerry has rescued the bird, and the bird is flying back to its cage, and Tom pops up from behind the couch with his mouth open.
With his mouth open, yeah.
The bird just flies into it. Now, Jerry freaks out. Now, I'm going to just say this like as an unbroken thing. He runs out with a hammer, a full-size hammer, opens Tom's mouth, which is just teeth now, and just smashes his teeth with the hammer, smashes them. The sound of, like, 16 panes of glass being thrown to the ground plays. Yeah. All of Tom's teeth fall out, except one, which Jerry then kicks out with his foot. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I think they also layer the sound of a gunshot over the hammer impact to make it even more violent. And I'd seen this since I was a kid, and for some reason, seeing it again recently, it just broke me. It just absolutely killed me how funny it was. Because as a kid, you don't realize just how violent it actually is.
Mm.
I'm not saying it as a moral thing as a bad thing. Now, getting rid of the racist stuff from Tom and Jerry cartoons, yeah, like, yes, good, yeah. Get rid of that, or at least have a disclaimer if you're releasing it on Blu-ray or something. Getting rid of the violence, no!
Mm.
No, don't get rid of the violence. Nobody's going to...
That is what it is.
Nobody's going to see
and
Popeye.
And that yam, what Popeye yam, and that's why you can't really do Popeye anymore.
Yeah. That's all he yams.
Yeah. By the way, if anyone out there is a game-making person and they want to remake the Don Priestley Popeye, don't do it without talking to me first about all the very good ideas I've had about how to do that.
Yes, let's get this happening.
Very good. I'm not even kidding. My version of the game remake that I have in my head, you'll cry at the end.
Is it because in your version you fully show the coitus between Popeye and olive oil?
Oh, you've spoiled it now. Yes.
Sorry. And so we come full circle to discussion of Popeye sex. Dave, what was this final thing you wanted to say about this pet to Popeye before we exciting podcast?
Now that I think about it, I feel as if perhaps I've already said this on this podcast before. And that goes for any amount of what I may have talked about on this episode, actually, to be honest. But Popeye was one of two or three games that we had a playground version of. Me and my friends on the infant's playground at school came up with a way to play this. And it involved walking around the playground and finding leaves. And those were, I guess it was autumn, and that those were hearts. So you pick up leaves, and then you bring them back to Mandy. And you deposit them at Mandy by standing in front of each other and waving your arms around and making kissy noises. And now... I must point out, to Mandy's absolute credit, she objected to this and didn't want to. but when we explained that we weren't going to be doing any kissing, it was just waving of arms, then she was fine with it, and the game proceeded. It was very good.
You know, one thing I'd like to say to finalize this is I'm looking at this Popeye Switch thing, right?
Yeah.
They've made a banner for it, like an image, like for the icon and such.
But you have to, don't
and
you?
The image is of Popeye standing there with his pipe in his mouth. There is smoke emanating from his pipe as he blows into it.
Of course.
And there's a little speech bubble coming, a thought bubble coming off his head.
Mm.
And in the thought bubble is some spinach. And I'm just like, that's it. You've encapsulated every aspect of the character right there.
They've got it all. Yeah. He thinks about spinach. He has a pipe.
Yeah. He's a very single-minded man. He only thinks about two things.
And he's there.
His goyle olive oil.
Yeah, yeah.
And his spinach.
If they made Popeye now, they would have to do it as it was done originally as a entertainment for adults. And I just think that for whatever reason, probably to do with the all-new Popeye show, he is thought of as a children's property now, so it wouldn't be done.
Well, how about this idea to round us off? Popeye,
mm-hmm.
2023,
mm-hmm.
Hulu series by Seth MacFarlane.
Mm. Oh. Yeah.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Popeye says ass.
ass.
And that's a beautiful joke to bring us to the finale of this podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And Dave, let's remind all of our fine listeners where they can locate you and your work in the future.
Every 2 weeks, you can hear me on Sonic the Comic, the podcast. Look that up. You'll find it. Or you can go straight to stctp.zone.
Mm.
And I'm Demon Tomato Dave on Twitter and YouTube and here and hither and yon.
And if you're a fan of the Retronauts, which I hope that you are because you're here, did you know that for, oh gosh, it's in British pounds. You're going to have to accept the fact that this is in British pounds,
mm-hmm,
listeners.
Mm-hmm.
For a mere £3 a month, you can get early access to every single weekly Monday episode of the show a week early, 7 days early. How insane is that?
Yep.
Like,
and the links in the tweets work as well, because they go, for early, for patrons, here's the link. And you click it, and I can't have this. Well, you will be able to.
You'll be able to have it, yeah. Oh, but actually, I found it in dollars now. $5 a month, which is a much better tier. You can also get exclusive episodes. There'll be two exclusive episodes per month, two whole full episodes per month,
oh, what?
As well as benefits on the Discord. And you'll also get Diamond Fights excellent This Week in Retro mini podcast plus columns, and also the new This Month on Retronauts community podcasts that Diamond and myself have done, where we talk about the things that have been discussed in said Discord. We talk about comments and we reply to comments and emails and such that we've had, and general retro news for that month. It's a very interesting new venture that I hope that you'll enjoy. And I guess that's our excellent Popeye episode. Dave, do you think that this has gone rather well, this Popeye episode, would you say?
Yeah.
Great!
Was that a lead-in? Was I supposed to say something Popeye-y there?
No, but, I mean, you could have. I was just looking for a sincerely held opinion there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you think Popeye holds any sincerely held opinions? Do you think that Popeye would be left-wing or right-wing?
Oh, my God. Well, he's left-wing. He's from, like, Depression era.
And, like, yes, he's actually, he is socialist, staunch socialist.
The comics were actually quite political in that way. And yeah.
Oh, really?
But he would say, like, oh, blow me down and stuff. That's what he would say about stuff. He'd go, blow me down. Someone in the politics would do something, he'd go, oh, blow me down, you know?
You know what? In the Seth MacFarlane version, he wouldn't say the down part.
No, he wouldn't, would he? Because it'd be more mature.
I'm going to end this now. Thank you very much for listening, and the Retronauts, the fine Retronauts, will be back very, very soon. God, I'm so bad at ending podcasts.
Watch the Popeye movie. It's actually quite good.
It's great.